Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk, a podcast from the Gospel Coalition Podcast Network, where we seek to apply biblical wisdom to everyday life. I'm Jasmine Holmes, and I'm here with my friends Jackie Hill-Perry and Melissa Kruger. A lot of topics we've discussed on this podcast have been things that are going to be part of our life, whether we want them to or not. We all have to make decisions. We all face times of discontentment. Nobody wants to be hurt by other Christians in the church, but today's topic is one that we can avoid if we choose to. But if we do, we will lose out on a spiritual blessing. So let's talk about building and cultivating friendships with people who aren't just like yourself. I'm excited about this one because my best friend in the whole entire world is CJ. And CJ is, we're the same age, but I met her right after Philip and I got married, 6 months after we got married. And we have been through so much together. She came and brought me food when I was in labor with my firstborn. We taught together, so we saw each other every day for a year at school. We've both moved cross-country to different places, and throughout the different seasons of our life have still been able to maintain a really close friendship, even though we live hundreds of miles away from each other now. So I am interested in hearing the kinds of different relationships that you guys have with people who are not the same as you, not in the same life stage, not the same ethnicity, not the same age, yeah. All that good stuff.
Well, I'll start with, I think that's one of the really cool parts of being a Christian, is that I am legitimately friends with people that I would have never been friends with if I wasn't in the body of Christ. One, I just wouldn't have had access to the kinds mm-hmm. of people that I have access to. But I don't think I would have the power to be humble or to even see just a benefit to being with people that don't act like, look like, sound like me. But it's hard. I think one of the hardest things for me isn't even ethnicity or age, but just personality. Mm. Like, you could be white, you could be Korean, you could be from Scandinavia, I don't care. But when you are like just so opposite, so like, you know, loud and excited and just don't know how to calm down at time, like those kind, or needy, that's a really difficult thing for me because I'm so to myself that mm-hmm. when I have a friend that just kind of wants to hang out all the time. So those kinds of friendships are difficult. But I have them.
Those are the more tricky ones for me, too.
When you're different,
When you're different in personality, mm-hmm. I would say those push me more. Sometimes because I make judgments.
Mm. Yes.
You know, the person who shows up 20 minutes late every time, you know. And you're like, do you not care about me?
Uh-huh.
You know, or leaves their child at your house an hour past when they said they would pick their child up.
Ooh.
You know, and it just feels like they're takers.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe. Mm. There's a whole, you know,
like
that's
timeliness, punctuality, all those things.
That's important.
You know, just whatever ways you could be different. So mm-hmm. it could be that person's looking at me and saying, why isn't she just more laid back about all this?
Right.
You know, and that person may not care that I leave my kid at their house an hour later. Mm-hmm. I need to try that more often. I should have tried
just
that.
Just see.
You should probably send a text.
Just, you know, just let them know. Yeah. It's so funny. CJ's always late. Like, and she will not mind me saying it.
she knows, I know, we all know. And so when I visit her in DC, and so I visited her in DC, and she was like, okay, we're going to go to this really cool, I think I may have mentioned once or twice that I kind of like houseplants. We're going to go to a plant nursery, and we're going to, there's this whole event, like how to take care of whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And she said, yeah, I get off work at 5. It starts at 7. It's in Baltimore. And in my mind already, I was like, we're not going to that.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. That's 2 hours. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You do 2 hours to like, to get off work, come pick me up, go. No, it's not going to happen. Yeah. But I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. Woo. So I go to Starbucks and I get comfortable. I bring a book.
That's smart.
Yeah, because I just know that we're not, like, this is not the plan that we're going to have. And it's fine. And she really thinks that it's what we're going to do. Like, she's committed. But she got there at, like 35 minutes after it started. And was like, let's go to Baltimore. Maybe we can make it. And I was like, we can hang out in Baltimore. But we're not going to make. We're not going to walk in. But it did take, like, it's taken us getting to know each other and getting used to each other and just kind of learning each other's rhythms. So I relate to the punctuality thing, definitely.
When it comes to, I guess, your friendships with people that are different from you, I think you have the people who they think they are discerning or observing this personality type from afar. And so it's like, I don't even want to build a relationship with you. Or so are you that kind of person, or are you the person who, when you get into the relationship, you realize, oh, we are so opposite. Do you lean into that? Or do you just say, I don't think I want to be your friend in the same way that I thought I wanted to be your friend?
I will normally be friends with almost anyone. Mm-hmm. I really do. I find people pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Just wherever, you know, whatever they're like, wherever they are. And I feel like you said about Christians. Mm-hmm. When we have lived in, you know, foreign countries or traveled, when I get in a church, I tell you, there is a DNA or whatever, spirit DNA,
yeah,
of Christians. That the smile and the welcome, mm-hmm, you're different. Like, oh, you're my mm-hmm brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And I find that almost more proof of the Spirit's work than anything else. Because I can go to a church in all these other continents and feel like I'm home.
Yeah, it's fellowship.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a shared commonality between you, even though we know nothing about each other.
Yeah. The hard for me is when trust gets broken.
Yeah.
And not just once, but over and over, mm-hmm, you know, I mean, or you feel like that person interprets you wrongly.
Mm, yeah.
That is hard.
Or gossips about you or says you're this way or that way. Mm-hmm. Those are where I get a little bit, I back off.
Yeah. I think the sticky thing is when your trust is connected to expectations you have that really just align with your own personality. I am a very, like, consistency matters to me. Mm-hmm. Loyalty matters to mm-hmm me. And I think a lot of that might be personality, but also my upbringing. I think my dad was so inconsistent that to me that read as, you don't love me. My mother was super consistent, which reads as, you love me, you care for me. And so in friendships, when I spot a hint of inconsistency, it just throws me off. And so I have a friend who is that way. Like, she will text you and say, hey, let's hang out on Thursday. Thursday comes, can't hang out. Or will text you, hey, mm-hmm, I'm coming over at 6. Doesn't text or call because she forgot. So those kinds of things. But so I say that to say I've had to train myself to realize that she's not breaching my trust. Because she does love me, she does care for me, she just doesn't know how to love me and care for me in the way that I expect. Does that make sense?
No, that makes total sense. Yeah. That makes total sense. So I go to therapy.
Praise God.
Every couple weeks. But I don't cry in therapy. I don't cry. So my therapist will always be like, it's okay, you can cry. And I'm like, you would like that, wouldn't you?
It's your power play. I'm like,
it's not going to happen.
I'm not going to cry.
So we were talking about a friend and a situation with a friend that was really hard for me. My friend is a huge words of encouragement person. Mm. I don't like words of encouragement very much. I don't, and it can come off kind of like, oh, I don't like them. Like, keep giving them to me. But like, honestly, I just feel like people say nice things all the time that they don't mean, just to make conversation or fill empty space. Mm. And I just am assuming when people are encouraging that that's what they're doing. My friend is, Jasmine, I just love you so much. I just appreciate everything you do. You are the wind beneath my wings.
Can she be my friend?
I mean, she is like,
I need effusive. A word of encouragement.
She is effusive with that encouragement. But kind of similar to what you said, Jackie, like she's not able to do a lot of things when it's time to make plans, she's busy. When it's time to, you know, get together, she has to cancel. Her husband has a really crazy work schedule, and so she doesn't get to see him that often. So when he's available, she like chucks the deuces at me and goes and hangs out with him, which I understand because she never gets to see him. Yeah. But I understand it like in my head, but in my heart, it can feel like, oh, like, okay, well, if you don't want to be friends, that's fine. But she's like, I love you, you know. And so I was sitting in therapy and I was talking to my therapist about this, and I was like, yeah, let's really like get into this. And she's like, why don't you like words of encouragement? And I almost cried. I didn't cry because strong. Okay. We're working on that in therapy.
Or pride.
We're working on that.
It's either one.
Maybe a little bit of both.
We're gonna get her to cry on the podcast.
Yeah, just like burst into tears. But she was like, why don't you like words of encouragement? And I said, because talk is cheap and people say whatever. And I didn't know that about myself. My friend didn't know that about myself. But it really helped me to understand this thing about myself where I have been hurt by people in the past who say that they love me but don't actually.
Right.
And don't show up when they say they're going to show up and don't show up in my life in those ways. And I did not even realize that my friend's difference of personality was so hard for me because of something that was going on inside of me. In fact, I didn't even realize that it was hard for me until I started talking to my therapist and learning more about myself. And it was really helpful to know that about myself, which brings me to, how does knowing yourself help you to have friendships with people who are different from you?
That's a really good question, because I think one thing I typically do is say, well, this is how I would love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm really looking at the world through a very self-centered lens most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually been helpful. I do think personality tests are kind of helpful. And I remember one time years ago, my husband and I both had to take one for work. And I read his personality profile and I was like, there's a whole group of people like you. I've been trying to change you for years. Yeah, I didn't realize, it's who you, I mean, in some sense, this is the baseline of kind of where you work from. Not that people can't change and we can't grow, and that we should be able to tell a friend, hey, it hurt me when you said you were going to come and then you didn't. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's communication there, but it did help me to know it wasn't kind of purposefully trying to hurt me.
Yes.
And that's really different.
Yeah. It doesn't mean they're a bad person or an unfaithful person or a...
Yes. And so knowing myself, but also just knowing there really are these other personalities out there, that really helped me to just shift and say, oh, this isn't about me.
Yeah. Because I think the tension in building relationships with people that are different is that, I think to your point about us seeing things from a self-centered lens, is that we really do want people made in our image and not God's. And so because they are made in God's image and not ours, it means that they reflect him more than they're going to reflect me, which is complicated. So they can reflect him as being creative or whatever, the fact that, like, you can look at them and see or know that there's a creator, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that they like the same music I like, doesn't mean that they think the same way that I think, doesn't mean that they structure that, like, and so I have to be much more gracious to the people that God has made like himself, even though they aren't like me.
Yeah,
that's unfair.
That's huge,
because I wouldn't dare want anybody to have those kinds of expectations of me, because I'm like, I don't have the same parents as you. I didn't grow up in the same city as you.
Right.
I don't got the same trauma. We don't even, you know, eat the same. I like black coffee. You over here eating tea. That's Jasmine.
Okay.
I felt that. With milk in it. I just don't get it.
Like, what?
I don't understand.
You do milk in your tea?
It's good.
It doesn't make sense. It's like juice and milk.
You're going to move to Charlotte.
I want to.
I know. We can have tea every
Especially
morning.
Especially if it's matcha. Oh my gosh.
We'll invite you.
I don't understand you people. But we're friends. Look at that.
I know.
Let's bring that back around.
We're different, but we're friends. I've even learned that learning more about my friends, learning more about myself, helps me to meet them where they are sometimes. Mm. So my friend who loves words of encouragement, she came over the other day. We're sitting on the couch together. She loves words of encouragement, and she likes touch. Like, she always sits really close.
Oh.
And I am like,
that would be hard for me.
I am a 10, like, I count hugs. So, like, if I'm hugging somebody, I'm like, 1, 2, 3, Like, I did it. I'm good. I hugged you. and I will hug you. Like, people are like, are you a hugger? Are you not? I will hug you. It's going to be a 3-second hug.
Yeah.
Just, that's just how it is. So my friend comes over and she's sitting next to me and I grabbed her hand and I was like, I have something to say to you. And she was like, okay. I couldn't look at her when I said it because it just felt too, like, it was too touchy. It was too much. But I was like, I have something to say to you. I really love you. I'm really glad that we're spending time together today. Thank you for coming over. Release hand, put it back in my lap. Like, and she was like, I looked up at her and she has like tears in her eyes. And she's like, I know that that was really hard. Like, I know that was a lot for you. And I was like, what? Like, yeah. Even for me to say, she'll be like, oh, I love you. And I'm like, I love your face. Knowing that about myself and knowing how she receives love helped me to show it to her in that way. And it's just that, like, it's that give and take. And I think we want friendships that are easy for us.
Yeah.
Where we communicate in the same language. Yeah. Where we don't have to bridge that gap of, you know, different ways of doing things where we're just the same. Because that means that we don't have to work and we don't have to grow. It can just be...
We really won't grow.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask this question. So we live... Even in a church culture that can get really divisive. I mean, just look on Twitter. But it can be divisive on lots of things that sometimes can, they're not, but they can feel more core to our identity than Christ. You know, I mean, whether it's our political stance, whether it's the color of our skin, whether it's how we homeschool or school our children or whatever. Why do you think those things become these really divisive things in relationships? And how can we fight them with the fact that we're a family as Christians? Like, we should look different. I get why the world is all a mess with this, right? But often the church just looks just as messy as the world.
Yeah.
How can we, by the Spirit's power, live differently?
Yeah. It seems like, well, I think we are naturally tribal. Because I think being tribal in that, like, I want to connect with people like me, think like me, look like me, respect what I respect, love what I love. That's a part of community, but I think it can be a perversion of community, you know? And so it's like where it becomes exclusive. I think the way to press against it is to recognize that God wants to use a variety of means to grow you and help you see the world and help you see life.
That's so good because I'm so limited. You know, I had one experience growing up. And while it was, you know, a suburban white girl experience.
And some... me too.
Suburban black, but all around the white girls.
Yes. You know, but my experience could be really different than my friend Betsy's experience. You know, who, I mean, so it's really difficult. We want to sometimes categorize people as, oh, you're this, so you must be this way without ever listening to their story and saying, what was your experience like? Because y'all's experiences were completely different. You know, and so someone could say, oh, I'm going to just look at the color of your skin and say you're this way. But that's not loving someone.
No, it's not.
Not at all. Yeah.
I have a question for you. Like, because sometimes I think even, and I say this with all the kindness in my heart, but like, you know, white people can look at black people and think that black people are a monolith. Like, they all think the same, like the same stuff. Y'all both want to bring fried chicken to the cookout? You know, that type of stuff. So, like, me and you are different, though we are ethnically the same. And so, have you had even difficulties building relationships with black women that are different from you?
Yes.
Because of how you were raised?
Yes.
Explain.
So, when I was growing up, I was raised, like, I was the only black girl in my class all the time. I always tell people, like, whenever you talk about, there's this thing that some of our white brothers and sisters in Christ do, or when they're talking to a black person, they'll say, oh yeah, I have a black friend. And my joke is like, yeah, that's me. Like, say that, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
And because of my upbringing and different cultural experiences that I had in my past, it's only been as an adult woman that I have actually had friendships with other black women. Most of my friendships growing up were with white people.
So your life has kind of been building relationships with people unlike you.
Yes.
But kind of similar to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Culturally.
And it's so funny because it creates this kind of sense of like never really belonging anywhere, because I did grow up in white suburban culture, but Jackie, you and I both know that no matter how hard we try to assimilate, we're still black at the end of the day. And so there was always this sense of, you know, I'm different. Like my hair is different. My skin is different. My, you know, even I look at memes from memes and Black Twitter have been such a balm to me. It's so funny because people will talk about like their Thanksgiving growing up or the shows they watched on TV, or Black Mama memes are my favorite thing in all of creation. And I'll be like, oh, somebody else, like, oh, we were having the same childhood. Mm. Like, even though I didn't know you and I couldn't talk to you because I was surrounded by Stephanie and Becky, who were lovely. Keisha was having the same childhood that I was having. Yeah. And it's just been such a like, oh, so good. And my husband always laughs at me because I'll be like, I'll talk to you talking about a new friend. I'll be excited. He'll be like, she's black, isn't she? I'm like, okay, but this is not something that I've had.
Yeah.
So I am extra excited. And even my husband, meeting my husband, marrying my husband, I'm married to a black man, which none of us thought was going to happen because of my surroundings. And it's just been such a sweet blessing.
One of the only times in my life, because I did grow up in suburbia, I was majority culture, so I normally felt at ease in my situations. I didn't have many situations where I grew up feeling different. I mean, although we all feel different at some level. I mean, I think that's core to who we are, because you're different personality. You know, my brother was a boy, so I was different than him. I mean, I think at some level we all feel that. But when I really started to experience what it can feel like to feel different culturally, you know, with the place you're living, is when I lived overseas. And I was in an English-speaking country, but the moment I would speak, people would say, where are you from? Well, they'd say it much. I was in the UK, so they said it much prettier than I said. And I felt like, I felt for the first time like my accent was ugly. You know, I mean, so there, you know, you felt different and lesser, you know, I think.
That's deep.
Yeah, and you know, so it's like, how do you, and so sometimes it made me act differently than I would in the States. I would, you know, when I was at the grocery store, I wouldn't speak. I would just say, I mean, you know, I just silently kind of would do my groceries or whatever, because I just didn't want to have the conversation. And so how can, whenever we're going into a new space, be it join a new church, join a new small group, how can that fear of being different actually keep us from relationship with others? Or how do we even get over that? Maybe how do we say, it's okay that I'm different. And I'm going to realize everyone in this room is different too, even if they look the same. And how can we boldly kind of just go into relationships saying, I'm just going to listen to their story rather than presuppose things about them?
I think one idea is to know that you're different on purpose. You know, the way God made you was a sovereign decision that came out of his wisdom and love. And so you don't have to change to be loved. Like, you're loved already by God. And so going into a new space then, I think, gives you the confidence and the security that you need. But also, like, I think about how in Genesis 1 and 2, I think, how God created Adam and Eve. I think we sometimes look at complementarity only in relation to marriage. But even Adam and Eve was a creation of community. And so they were different yet alike. And so I think we're modeling that when we go into spaces where people are different from us, where we're able to actually benefit from their differences. But they also benefit from you. The things about you that actually make you strange and make you unique are just as necessary to them and beneficial to them as their differences and their uniqueness is to you. And so I think that would encourage me to know, no, I'm needed, not in an arrogant way, but God has placed me here to help and serve people with my unique abilities and skills and personality types.
That's good. That's good. You can boldly go and say, the Lord made me and fashioned me to be part of his body. And not in a prideful way, like there's no one else like me.
Not to
pump up your self-esteem, but there isn't anyone. And the God of all the universe called me to himself. And so I can go forward boldly, because I do think sometimes it's our insecurity that builds a wall with other people. You know, so if you're not in the same season of life as me, you can't understand my problems. You know, so if you don't have young children, you know, you can't get what my day looks like. And so therefore we don't make friends with the single woman in our congregation who might have a lot to tell us about Jesus. Oh, yeah. And we miss that friendship.
And make for a good babysitter.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, but I'm not.
Well, but and for her to feel part of a family.
Yes.
I mean, one of my closest friends, she started in our life as our babysitter. She moved. She was 22, and I had these young kids. And as she's aged and as we've aged, she's just become my friend. And now she actually lives five houses down from me. And she has three young boys of her own. And now all my kids are older. So when her little boys come into my house and give me these hugs and say, Miss Melissa, you know, and I don't have anyone doing that now. Yeah. And she's like, it's crazy when we come over here. But I'm like, I love that they go get all the Nerf guns and are crazy, because I don't have that kind of crazy in my house anymore. It's been such a joy for us to be in different seasons. So if I had said she wouldn't want to come into my mess and not invited her over when I had these little children, I would have missed this whole friendship, even though our life stages have never met up. But she went walking with my 19-year-old before she went to college just to talk to her about life. Yeah, it's been this beautiful friendship that is actually better because it's different. Yeah.
It's like practicing heaven.
Yeah.
You know, tribes, languages, tongues, like heaven will be full of people unlike us, but like us.
Absolutely. I love what you said too about our insecurity. I think owning our insecurity is a big part of having relationships with people who are different than us. I know for my part, we talked a little bit about it in the Church Hurt episode, but I've had a lot of friendships that imploded. And so I often find myself like, if I have a friend and she never texts me back, I just assume she doesn't want to talk to me, doesn't want to be my friend. And not in a way that's like, oh, woe is me, but just kind of like, okay, well, I'll just fade out of her life then. since she's busy. Or if I have a friend that can like never get together, I'm like, oh, that's probably a subliminal message. Like, she probably just don't want to hang out, so I'm just going to leave her alone. Like, that's just how I kind of like think through things. But I've realized that that's my way of protecting myself, and that's my way of not getting hurt. And it's my way of not having somebody else say, hey, Jasmine, like, you're an inconvenience, or I don't really like you, or I'm like, well, I'll just back off. So before you get a chance to say that to me, because you probably want to say it anyway. And I've had to own that that's my stuff. That's not my friend's fault for not texting me back right away. That's not my friend's fault for not being able to come over. That's me. And that's my hurt. And I can talk about it to that friend, but also I can take it to the Lord. I can talk about it to my therapist, where I will not cry. I can talk about it to my, you know, I can work through those things. And that's been a really helpful and empowering thing for me in having new relationships with people who are not like me, to just know that my tendency to run and my tendency to kind of like insulate myself from potential hurt is not of the Lord, and it needs to be addressed, has been really good for me.
That's good. We're all three women here. And so one of the most different types of friendships we can have are friendships with men. So I want to ask, how have you continued, and is it okay to continue having friendships with men, you know, as a married woman? But how has that changed your perspective? How has actually having friendships with men been good to have? Because I can normally get with a room of girlfriends and we see things from the same perspective a lot of times. But sometimes it's my male friends who push me in certain ways with how they say things and how they do things and even what they think. And I found it really good. But I just wonder, how do we do that? Because sometimes in the church, I think that's kind of a scary thing.
Yeah, you know, totally.
Can we be friends? But in the scriptures, I do see this. Mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and daughters and sons. You know, Paul talked about one woman who is she has been like a mother to me. You know, and you see these relationships that are like family. So I hope we can have that in the church. But how do we do that well?
I don't have a lot of male friends. I have one in particular. I talked about Israel on the last episode. It was a tour that we went on with a lot of people. And one of the people was Johnny, who's several years younger than I am. It's so funny because Philip saw pictures and he was like, yeah, we weren't dating yet. He was like, I thought you were with that guy. It's like, that is my little brother. And he is like every single time I'll post something on Instagram, he'll like comment something encouraging. He is always just the most uplifting, hilarious, love him person. And I, when I got married, I was kind of like, oh, can I still be friends with Johnny? Like, is that okay? And I'm so glad that I am. Like, I'm so glad that I didn't forfeit that relationship, because he's so encouraging and it's been fun to watch him grow in the Lord and to be able to speak into his life, have him speak into mine. It's definitely a little brother, big sister relationship.
Yeah. I think growing up, like in high school in particular, I had more male friends than I had female. And even when I became a new Christian, I had more men friends just because I guess I related to them more in some ways. I think now I still retain a lot of the older friendships I have. And then a lot of Preston's, my husband's friends, have become my friends if they're over the house. And so I think one thing I enjoy about my male friendships the most is that they just don't talk about the same stuff. Like sometimes I think having coffee with women, it's just this is a generalization, but it's my experience. It's just always somehow comes back to kids and school and marriage. And it's just like, can we just talk about something else? Yep. And so I think men, just their approach to conversations is so different. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I grew up with a brother, and so it was the most natural thing. His friends were always over, and that's what I was kind of used to. And it's funny, when I think about my brother, because my brother and I were at the same church for years, and sometimes people didn't know we were siblings. And, you know, we'd be talking close, because he's my brother, and sometimes I'd see people looking at us, and I was like, do they think we're inappropriate? He's my brother. But then I thought, that's how it should be viewed with all my brothers in Christ. Right. They're my brothers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're my brothers. We can be friends or whatever. And I've learned so much from just different brothers in the faith and listening to them and hearing their perspective.
Absolutely.
Is really helpful, because sometimes they do just think differently about theological issues or even political issues. I just like hearing people's perspective. And so I think one of the things I think in all of this, of having friends that are different from us, I don't think we have to be fearful about that, because it's actually a way to learn about the world.
Yeah, it is.
And do I really want to go around the world with just such a finite perspective on life? Because I'm one little dot. Whereas every time I meet someone, it expands what I understand about the world and about experiences in the world. And it actually can help us share the gospel better.
Absolutely.
To that point, what do you say to those who, you know, how the Bible says, you know, friendship with the world is in enmity with God. And they read into that and say, I can't be friends with worldly people. Or Psalms 1, blessed are those who walk not in the counsel of the wicked. Is there room and space and wisdom to be learned with being friends with unbelievers?
I think there is. I mean, in our last episode, we talked about mentorship. You don't want to have a mentorship relationship with an unbeliever that's centered around your faith, right? But what about if you're at work and you're a teacher and there's a really good teacher who is not a believer, but is really good at her job and can be a really good mentor to you? I can't think of anybody who would be like, oh, no, that's not going to work. No, she can't.
She's going to lead me astray.
Yeah, she can't teach you how to teach. There is this thing called common grace that I love so much. And there are friendships and relationships with people that I think can be beneficial regardless of their religious beliefs, and also gospel opportunities that can come from those friendships. My only caveat would be just making sure that when you're in those relationships, you remember who you are and focus less on who they are and what they're doing, and more on, are you being who you're supposed to be in that relationship?
Yeah, because I think of that Psalm 1, it says, the counsel of the wicked. I do think we have to be careful about whose advice we're taking, especially in spiritual things. So if that, you know, teacher friend or whatever starts saying, you know, I know your marriage is hard. You know, I mean, he seems grumpy. You should just get out of it. And you be you and you do your life. Then you have to start saying, am I going to this person because they're telling me what I want to hear? You know, and am I taking their counsel because it says good? So I think the friendship of the world is almost that worldly system. And we want to look just like the world. We want to be like the world. Whereas we do need people reminding us of the truth of the gospel. And I think about not being yoked with an unbeliever. That means like, we're put under the same yoke, going the same direction. My life should look different than an unbeliever, but that doesn't mean I don't want to have non-Christian friends. You know, I want to be engaged with them, hearing their stories so that I can try to find ways to share the gospel with them.
Being friends with non-Christians has literally helped me be a better minister. just because, you know, I remember when I realized all of my friends are following Christians on Twitter. They're reading the same Christian books. They're listening to the same Christian music. Mm-hmm. And so even, and I'm not even equipping myself to know or understand other worldviews so that I can then speak that or speak into that with the gospel. And mm-hmm. so I think being friends with non-Christians, they'll say, so one of my friends, for example, she's a lesbian. And she was telling me just some of the jargon that Christians use that's offensive or feels disingenuous. And I take that for myself, but also when I preach a workshop on evangelism to the same-sex community, now I have context for, hey, when y'all say, I love you, I say this in love, but don't even say that mm-hmm. because they already know what's about to happen. They've shut down. They won't hear the gospel anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, but I wouldn't have learned that from a Christian book. Mm-hmm. I would only learn that from a non-Christian.
Yeah. Well, that's been a really great conversation about friendships, relationships. There's so much more that could be said. But I think the action step that I would love to give would just be to look around at your relationships and see how you can be a better friend to people who are different from you. Maybe there's somebody in your life who's different that you've kind of been hesitating about getting to know.
Can I name some differences?
Yes.
Socioeconomically different, physically different, mm-hmm. Racially, ethnically, culturally different, mm-hmm. Age-wise different, life stage different. Mm-hmm. Just I think naming them actually gives us clarity on what we mean by different.
Yeah, and that's even good. Not just being friends with people who only go to your church.
Yeah,
if you're friends with other Christians, like. Why are you only friends with people who go to your church?
Yeah.
Why aren't
you friends with people different denominations.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Absolutely.
I like you're Baptist, one. Right?
I'm Presbyterian.
Oh,
now.
You're Presbyterian now, but you were raised Baptist.
I absolutely was raised Baptist. And I married a Presbyterian, so bridging gaps, you know?
Yeah.
I'm all about it. Okay, so I think now is a good time to wind down and talk about our favorite things. So this week, I want to know, what's your favorite book that shaped you spiritually?
I have two.
Okay.
One is a biography. So I feel like they're very different. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, a biography speaks to me about somebody's life. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a mentor by watching their life. And it's A Chance to Die. It's a story about Amy Carmichael, mm-hmm. who's a missionary in India. And I can't tell you how much her words, she wrote poems mm-hmm. and different things. Those words come back to me so much. It was written by Elizabeth Elliot. Mm-hmm. But just the example of a woman who was a single woman, you know, she was in a completely different season of life than I ever was. But I learned so much from her faithful obedience to the Lord and just seeing that lived out over decades in a foreign country. The other one is Knowing God by J.I. Packer. Mm-hmm. Every word he writes just felt packed with meaning mm-hmm. about knowing God mm-hmm. and why. I think for years I went to the Bible wanting to know myself. And he really gave me a vision to go into the Bible and want to know God. That's and that good. That would change everything.
That's mm-hmm. huge. Yeah, I think by far my entire Christian life and ministry has been shaped by Desiring God by John Piper. Mm-hmm. Just because I discovered, even though it took me some years to read the book and actually understand it, but I think in the early stages of my Christian walk, I just didn't have a grasp on the beauty of God. Like, I heard about God and his hatred of sin and stuff like that, but to know that he was a beautiful mm-hmm. God, and therefore to pursue him was to pursue beauty and joy and love and all of that. And it's literally shaped how I see the commandments. Yeah. It's shaped how I've seen the promises of God. And it's fueled how I communicate sermons, even. Like, I always try to make God beautiful mm-hmm. In my writing and in my teaching, because I think I learned that from Piper.
Yeah, so I love that. He is really good at that.
Yeah.
Mine, I have two as well. The first one is also a biography, The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. Just throughout my life, I've read it over and over and over again and related to her so much. Actually, I thought I wasn't going to get married because she was never married. I thought, like, there's all these things about her life. I was like, yeah, I know, like, me and Corrie, like, we're like this. but just her life is encouraging because when she was in the darkest places, she was not afraid to admit her doubt and to allow the Holy Spirit to convict her through the life mostly of her sister, mm-hmm. Betsy. And Betsy is kind of the Christian that we all want to be.
And Corey is the Christian we all are.
Yes, Corey is the Christian that we all are. And once you get to the end of the book, you realize she's a Christian that we all hope we could be. My second one is A Sure Guide to Heaven by a Puritan named Joseph. I always butcher his last name. I think it's A-L-L-E-I-M-E. But just look up A Sure Guide to Heaven. You can actually just find it. Like, the PDF is online. And it's just one of those fantastically convicting books, and it's about the way of salvation. And I, like, growing up in a Christian home, I don't know how many times I prayed that prayer just to make sure that it stuck. I was like, let me just walk down the aisle one more time. And that book is just this encouraging primer on what it is to be saved, and I love it just so much. It's very encouraging. All right, well, that's all we have for this episode of Let's Talk. Next week, we'll be covering the topic of taming the tongue. That's probably something we all need to be challenged on, so please be sure to tune in. I know I need to be challenged on it. You can subscribe to Let's Talk through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Check out other shows from the Gospel Coalition Podcast Network at tgc.org/podcasts. The Gospel Coalition connects Christians to resources that apply the truth and beauty of the gospel to all of life.